Welcome back, everybody, to our Let's Talk Green County program here on the Raccoon Valley Radio Network. This is Coltrane Carlson, and our guest today is our State Representative Phil Thompson joining us once again. So thank you very much, sir, for coming on.
Thanks for having me again, Coltrane.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about some dealings here that have happened in the past week or two. We'll get the education stuff kind of out of the way first here. The House recently passed a bill that concerns with transparency for the school district to parents at home. Can you tell us a little bit about the details behind the bill that you actually floor managed?
Sure. So we heard from a lot of parents that were concerned with some materials that they've seen in libraries and in classrooms. Really, instead of taking the approach of, you know, policing all that material, we really just wanted to make sure that there's a lot more transparency of what's in libraries and what's going on in classrooms. So looked at a bunch of school districts across the state and tried to just figure out what are the best practices, what are teachers already doing to provide that information for parents, and use that as a model as far as what we want to make the statewide standard. So at the beginning of the year, schools are expected to publish syllabi, core course materials, and instructional materials. And then throughout the year, obviously teaching's an art. There's a lot of dynamic moments in teaching. And so we wanted to make sure that teachers weren't locked into rigid plans. Obviously, that isn't going to be a great environment for our students. So we wanted to make sure that they had the flexibility to change materials throughout the year. 85% of our schools are using some kind of digital platform, Google Classroom or Canvas. So what we did was we said, okay, if you change materials, that's totally fine. Just make sure that's reflected in that platform. And that doesn't mean publish your lesson plans. It means if I use this book or show this video, that that's just reflected in Google Classroom or whatever your digital platform is. And then providing view-only access to parents that request it. So that's how we approach the transparency in the classroom piece, allowed for that flexibility in teaching. And then as far as the library books are concerned, you know, we don't really want to be in a position where we're looking at every single book, policing all that stuff. So what we decided to do was, you know, have school districts publish those library catalogs. 55% of them already do this. 45% don't have it online, or they don't have those digital catalogs. So we just wanted to say, publish those library books, show parents what's out there, and then we created a review process for parents to bring those concerns to school boards and make sure that that process is published to parents. So really, at the end of the day, we just wanted to take a route of being open and transparent with parents, showing them what's out there, making sure that they know the process or have access to process for review of materials.
Is there any consequences in the bill if a teacher doesn't adhere to, you know, making the changes within the time frame that the bill stipulates?
Right. Well, if they violate the transparency requirements laid in the bill, so and they're found to have done that by the Department of Education, they're given a 14-day corrective period. So they have 14 days to go back and make sure that the platform reflects the materials that were used in the classroom. If they do not make those corrections at that point, somebody that violates that can be referred to the Board of Education examiners, or the school district. They can withhold funds until they're in compliance, or a civil penalty of $500 to $5,000 can be issued to that school district.
Now, taking another look at unemployment, obviously that was one of the priorities that the governor had in her State of the State address earlier in the session. Sounds to me like there's been a lot of movement on that side of things. Tell us about what the House has passed versus what the Senate has passed.
Sure. So we passed an unemployment reform bill that reduced the number of weeks of unemployment down to 16 weeks, right about 4 months of unemployment benefits. And there's also another piece that's being debated back and forth between the House and Senate, which is this 1 week waiting period. What we're seeing is a lot of businesses will lay off employees for 1 week and allow their employees to draw those benefits for that week and then come back to their job. Obviously, you know, most of us see unemployment. If you're on unemployment, you should be seeking another job. Obviously, people that are laid off temporarily aren't looking for that other position. So, you know, we've done a little bit of math with workforce development, and they believe that it will save our trust fund a lot of money to pass that 1 week waiting period. We didn't have the votes initially in the House to pass that, so we sent it over to the Senate with just a 16-week reduction. The Senate then amended that, put the 1 week waiting period back in, and sent it over to the House. You know, personally, I'm okay with that. I'd like for us to move on some unemployment reform. I'm fine with the 1 week waiting period. It makes a lot of sense. Definitely reducing the number of weeks to 16 weeks in this climate, in this working environment. I find it hard to believe that you'd have to be on unemployment much longer than that to find another position. So I am definitely supportive of this reform, and hopefully we can accept the Senate version, but we've got to have that conversation in the House.
And something else the House did kind of pass over to the Senate, and that is a moratorium on pipeline companies, because there are three of them looking to establish underground pipelines in the state, from using eminent domain for at least a time period of the rest of this year for the most part. Can you tell us about why the House wanted to come up with something like this to pass over to the Senate, first of all?
Sure. So, I mean, we're getting to the end of session here. We're looking, hopefully, by the end of April, we'll be able to gavel out. We just wanted to make sure that we have to be able to react to some of this. And as we get closer to leaving for the rest of the year, we know that a lot of landowners are going to be negotiating contracts with these pipelines. So we wanted to make sure that they had a little bit of leverage, that they couldn't be, the threat of eminent domain wouldn't be looming over their heads while they work out these contracts. And there are a lot of questions about liability and what's fair. And so we just want to make sure that that threat of eminent domain wasn't looming over their heads while we're out of session and couldn't really do anything to fix it. So we felt like this was a good medium ground to, you know, still allow these projects to continue so long as they can work them out and make sure that landowners had a little bit more leverage to negotiate these contracts the way they should be.
When you all come back next session and trying to take a look at the same topic area to possibly make some changes to, what are some things that you see that's not the best use of how the current law could be if you were to make changes to it?
I don't like to be reactive, but I think in this case, we're going to have to be. I've heard from both sides. I've heard a lot of farmers that really feel like they're being treated fairly, a lot of landowners that feel that they're being treated fairly and working out good contracts. A lot of people just want to figure out what fair is. And again, really, this is just about giving people a little bit of leverage here, not being afraid of that threat of eminent domain, because, you know, there is a threat of not really getting the fair deal at the end of all this. If you walk away from the table, you know, they could come back, and if they're given eminent domain, like, you're probably going to get significantly less than fair. So we just wanted to make sure that people had time to negotiate these contracts. And I think when we come back next year, we're going to see if there continue to be problems with this. If we continue to feel that landowners are being treated unfairly, then we can take action.
And finally, the last thing we'll tackle here is something that I don't know if we've ever been able to discuss in your tenure in the House. And that is starting work and doing actually the lion's share being done on the budget side for the next fiscal year. Usually that's the last thing that happens, and you don't start that until this month, but you've already started those that side of the talk. So tell me a little bit about how the House has progressed on its side of the budgetary talks.
Yeah, so we started right away with our budget subcommittees, and in those we have hearings with our department heads and members of different departments where we bring in and kind of vet how they're spending money, what they need from us, you know, different ways that we can adjust their budgets, allow flexibility to, you know, fix a lot of the problems that we see across our state. So we have those budget subcommittees, and then after that we start to finally flesh out our line items. We started this really early, got our targets out there, we figured out, you know, what our priorities were, and then we started fleshing out budgets. And at this point, we've sent 7 of our 9 budgets over to the Senate. Historically, the House would introduce half the budgets and the Senate will introduce half the budgets. This year, we're doing it a little bit differently, apparently. The House has done 7 of our 9 budgets and sent those over to the Senate. And now they've been referred to Senate Appropriations, and they're starting to evaluate our bills as kind of the bench line. So we're really moving. Like I said, 7 of 9, we still have to send our Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund budget over, which is more infrastructure related, and the Health and Human Services, which deals with mental health, our rural hospitals, a lot of things that are really important to rural Iowa. So we're still fleshing that out. I think we've got a good bill there, too, that we'll probably send over to the Senate.
And that's our guest for today's Let's Talk Green County program. Here with our state representative is Phil Thompson joining us once again. You're listening to the Raccoon Valley Radio Network.